Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey everybody, what's up? And welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. Now here we are coming into the new year, 2019. So you got to have your business plan together. Everybody got that down? If you don't, go check out my website at theroofershow.com. You can get a free download. It's called the one-page business plan. It's simple, lays everything out. It makes it easy for you, but you'll get a professional business plan in just a few hours. So check that out on my website. Today, I've got a great interview with Danny Kerr. Danny's the co-founder of the Breakthrough Academy, and they help contractors grow their businesses, become more profitable, and most importantly, help contractors get back the control of their time, which is exactly what this show is about, which is grow your roofing business, make more money, and have more free time. So we are definitely on the same page. The Breakthrough Academy is currently working with over 220 business owners and throughout North America. They really know their stuff. He's got a great presentation. I was down in Austin recently at the Job Nimbus Conference, where he gave the keynote address. It was titled Three Keys to Success. And I didn't have a chance to ask him some of these questions, so I wanted to have him on the show today so we can get into that. And be sure to stick around to the end because Danny's going to give us some awesome templates that are going to make our job a hell of a lot easier. So you want to check that out. But before we get into the interview with Danny, I want to thank our sponsor who makes this show possible, and that's Ruby Receptionists. You've heard me rave about Ruby and how they leave that great first impression by answering the phone with professional receptionists that can answer those questions that your prospects have. And that's not going to happen if you push them into voicemail. They're not even going to leave a message. And you can save a ton of money over a front office receptionist. They don't go to lunch. They don't take vacations. They don't get sick. I mean, it's a great service that you can count on at a fraction of the cost. But go check out their website at callruby.com/roofershow. And you can sign up for a test drive, which is pretty cool. It'll tell you right off the bat if the service is right for you. So go take a look. If it is, use the promo code ROOFER50 and they'll knock off $50 off your first service. So check it out. callruby.com/roofershow. All right, well, let's get into our interview with Danny Kerr. Danny, thanks for coming on to the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for having us.
Well, as I said in the intro, we met down at the Job Nimbus Solutions Summit down in Austin a few weeks ago, where you did the keynote, had some great information, and I had to get you on the show to share that with our Roofer Show audience. And especially since we're recording this coming into December, you know, it's the perfect time to really take a step back and take a look at our business. We're coming into the new year. And on The Roofer Show, we're constantly talking about business planning and the need to have that written plan, which I'm sure everybody's got dialed in by now, or maybe not. But hopefully this will give you a kick in the pants to get it done. I wanted to get into your topic at the keynote because I thought that was great. And that was about the three keys to success in business, where you talked about how to really build successful, not only construction companies, but in particular, roofing businesses. So I wanted to get into that. But before we do, can you just give a little background about yourself and how you got into the business of helping other contractors?
Totally. Because I did not expect to ever be here, so it's a bit of a story to how it all happened. Yeah, so I'm Canadian, so you guys might hear that in my voice as we get chatting. But grew up in Vancouver, just outside of Vancouver, British Columbia, a place called Abbotsford. And most of my life, I was the furthest thing from a competent, structured business owner that was, running a large organization. I was a bit of a rebel. I definitely, as a young kid, didn't have a lot going for me. I mean, I'm dyslexic. I still am dyslexic, and I struggled a lot in school. So it kind of set a tone for me being, I won't say a failure, but maybe being kind of guy where it's like, that guy's probably not going to go anywhere. I was pretty stubborn. I was angry at the world, and I was a tough guy to handle. And a lot of it came from just being dyslexic. I was picked on at school quite a bit. I had to go to four different schools before I kind of found a place that I fit in. Mm-hmm. And life was not kind to me at a young age. And I had to really, change myself or transform myself to be able to be who I am today. And a lot of that actually came from the first big hit I ever had in my life, which was losing my dad to a drug overdose when I was 14. And, when you're 14, most kids are worried about, girls and being cool and, all that kind of stuff. And I was too at that time. And then suddenly I got slapped in the face with this massive, reality of life. And I really started to question myself. I was like, do I want to be my dad? Do I want to try and figure out how to be something else? Because I was kind of heading down the same path he had down. And I remember my mom, I asked her, I was like, how old was dad when he dropped out of school? Because I was kind of thinking about that. And she's like, Danny, he was 14 years old. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to become my dad. Wow. Yeah. So it hit me pretty hard. And like when a lot of people my age were just worried about the basics, just being cool in school, I was like worried about my future and worried about who I was going to become. I was like literally worried about dying and being dead in a ditch somewhere. But not many people think about that. So it woke me up pretty fast and I changed a lot. I started going from being a failing school student to at a 4.0 in grade 12. And I applied a lot of that same energy into business. I was in university to actually be a police officer, funny of all things, and kind of figured out along the way that that wasn't necessarily the right path for me, but I did want to do something that impacted people and was a leader of others. Like I was fairly naturally good at, I guess being a leader. That was the one thing I had on my side for myself. And so I applied myself to this little organization called College Pro Painters, which was it's a student-based painting organization. They teach young kids how to run their first, business, and painting is the model that they give you. Yeah. And it was incredible for me. It was the thing I realized was being successful didn't mean that I had to do it academically, because that was always a challenge for me. And I did okay in school, but I worked really hard. Like I worked 60 to 80 hours a week with three courses in university. Like I worked extremely hard to get just a B average, right? And suddenly I was in this thing called College Pro Painters, where I was in charge of sales and marketing and hiring and training staff and dealing with customer complaints and collecting checks and balancing my bank account. And I don't know why, but I was just like tuned for it. I loved the challenge. I loved the ability to be in control of my own agenda. I loved the idea that I got to create my own reality, I guess you'd say. And for a couple of years, that was my bread and butter, and I kicked butt in that world. I worked a lot, but I was happy to do it. I was 18 to about 22 was kind of like my prime years with them, when I was really just growing uncontrollably and having a lot of fun doing it. But around 22, I was also starting to realize that this like drive of like uncontrollable like push for the next level was kind of wearing me out on a personal side. And this obsession with trying to be successful and not trying to be my dad had gone almost too far on the other side. And I was becoming kind of a workaholic. My girlfriend, who'd been with me since I was 16 years old, was questioning whether or not we should ever be getting married and lasting a long time, because the relationship consisted of her just waiting for me to come home late at night, right? So I realized like my greatest strength had also become one of my greatest weaknesses, which was like working extremely hard to win. Like I wasn't the most skilled person in the room, but I was always the one that was willing to work the hardest. And that was like almost a chip on my shoulder that I held all the time. I was like, well, I'll outwork you. And that wasn't going to work long term, because I was going to lose a lot of other things in my life as a result. So I had to make a pretty big shift. This was also around the same time that the recession happened. So I guess to give you some context, I'd run this painting business. I got it to about $1.3 million a year in sales. Had about, we did that all in 4 months in production. So we had about 100 painting staff that worked in the summer months. So painting's a little different than roofing, but it's quite a bit of people to get a small revenue number done, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. And at that level, I realized like if I'm going to move any further in business or a career with my own self, or just to have my wife one day around with me, I'm going to need to change what I do. And I started to focus a lot more on the stuff we're going to talk about today. And it really revolved around really understanding where I was actually heading, understanding how to delegate, understanding how to hire and train really good people, and stop doing what everyone used to call Danny Octane, stop being the energy behind everything in the business and empower other people to take it from me. And it transformed me. It transformed me in such a way that to this day, this is now what I teach. This is what our organization, Breakthrough Academy, is actually all about. You know, and I'm not even the person who does all of it, right? I've got two other business partners. We're all 33% owners in this company that I'm one part of it. I'm not all of it because I know I don't have the complete package to make everything successful in our organization. And I'm humble to that. And I don't try and be all things to all people anymore. So, yeah, it's been a cool journey. It's all been in the trades and I've learned a lot. And now I've decided what better way to relive that experience than to just teach it and do that same thing with others and help entrepreneurs who have kind of got themselves stuck in this growing organization where they're just the hardest workers there, where they need to kind of be a little bit more finesse in their approach with their organization and how to grow it properly.
Wow. So. Well, it's quite a story, but I know that that's a very similar story to so many of us in the building a business, because that's what we do is we get so hooked into just working so many long hours, and we never take a time to step back. And that's really the biggest complaint that contractors that I work with have. They're just working their ass off. And, you know, they're running around in circles. They're having problems at home. They don't get a chance to see their kids. It doesn't have to be this way. It's a matter of taking a step back and just really looking at getting your business organized, eliminating this chaos, and really getting down to having good people, good systems in place. That's what I want to jump into. So why don't we get right into it? You talk about the three keys to success. And your first key, you talk about getting a clear vision. And something that you say is always start with the end in mind. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not my statement. That's somebody, you know, much smarter than me said that to me one day.
Stephen Covey, but that's all right.
Yeah. And it reminded me of the fact that I often put my head down and just do what's in front of me for the next week or two, and I execute extremely well. But I don't always put my head up enough to realize, like, was all that execution that would get done so well, was it even worth it? Was it even leading somewhere? Right. And I've done, I don't know, like, I've had a lot of projects. Let's say I've hired, you know, I remember hiring a subcontractor to do cold calling for us, and I set up a Valpak system to have, like, little mail, you know, drops sent out to, you know, whatever it was, like 15,000 homes in the city of Edmonton when I was operating Edmonton. And I set the whole thing up and I was all excited about it, and we executed it and we got like next to no leads. And what I realized was like I didn't actually test and understand like what was our ideal customer going to respond to? Why would they respond to that? What was actually the end goal here? Was I trying to get a certain amount of leads and a certain amount of work? Did I do any pre-thought before I just went and put all these things into action? No, I went and took action first and thought about the results later. And it's been numerous times like that in my career growing my organization and painting that I started to realize, like, if you don't know where you're actually heading and you can't build that backwards, you're going to decide to do a lot of things that are very like reactionary versus proactive. And right. Some of them are going to work out great and you're going to be proud of those things and you're going to stand up and say, see, it's worth being reactionary. And there's going to be a lot of things you're probably going to have to probably come to terms with and realize you wasted half your time on stuff that didn't work out. As entrepreneurs, as people in business, we don't have that kind of time to waste, especially as we grow. When you're in startup phase, that can kind of work. But when you get established in an organization, you can't afford that because it's not even your time anymore that you're wasting. It can be 10, 20, 50, 100 staff that are working on the wrong stuff for way too long.
Yeah. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So you've got to have a clear end, a clear destination of where you're heading. And if you don't know that, as you say, you're constantly going to be reacting. You're never going to be proactive, but it's going to be putting out those fires all day long, reacting to what is going on around you rather than having a plan and going towards that end. And that's what really makes this business so stressful, is just always putting out the fires and not having control and always dealing with the chaos, don't you think?
Yeah, and then you get caught in it. And then there is no opportunity to think ahead because you've told yourself and you've given yourself a job that is, you know, so overwhelming that there is no space to think through where you're going. And that will happen. It's happened to me multiple times in my career. It'll probably happen again. And ultimately, what's important is that you acknowledge it, recognize it, and set things in place so that slowly you can get back out of it, right? Like every year is a very good time to reset. December is an extremely good time, especially for people in trades, because not everybody, but for most of us, the industry starts to slow down a little bit. We start to have a bit of a reprieve. And if we can take that time and use it to actually reflect on where we've been and what went well and what didn't go well, write those things down and actually make a bit of a plan for next year on, like, you know, maybe a simple one-page plan, which, you know, I use every single year. We sit down in the cabin, we lock ourselves up for 3 days. We look through all of our numbers, we look through all of our initiatives, we look through our org structure and all of our people, and we think through what went well, what didn't go well, and where is there opportunity for growth and change, and where are things that are working extremely well that we need to just continue doing and not forget about. And now let's go forward with confidence in our decision-making, because these three things are important. These six things need to go away, and this is one new initiative we're going to experiment with and be willing to fail on, but it's only a small piece to the bigger picture.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've got to get out of the office and take a step back so you can see the forest through the trees. We would take 2 or 3 days off. We'd have a retreat each year and take our key people out of town, take a look at what we need to do, lay it all out, get our action plan together, and really get ready for the new year. Yeah, you gotta have a business plan. You got to have it together. And without getting away, taking a look from the outside, it's going to be tough to do.
And it helps you kind of think through it in a simple manner, right? Like if you're like, okay, I want to double my sales next year. Well, that might mean you need to hire 2 sales managers or 2 sales guys that to help you in doing that. Okay, cool. So what's involved in doing that? Well, I need to put out ads for those people. I need to figure out what I'm interviewing those people on. I need to get so many kind of, you know, interviews done under my belt before I know kind of who I'm hiring. And all these things take time. But if you just say to yourself, yeah, we need a few more sales guys next year at some point, and then all of a sudden March, April hits and you don't have enough people in place because you didn't do enough interviews and you reactively hire the 2 guys that showed up for their interview, and now you're struggling with them all summer to get them to provide for you a, you know, a sales metric that you were trying to hit, you get stuck in it again. And it's kind of like you have time in the winter to actually step through all the little things involved with these goals and then schedule them. Okay, January, we're going to start posting ads. I'm going to do my first interview by January 20th. I'm going to interview people from January 20th to, you know, March 1st. And I want to have my final hires ready for March 1st so I can train them from March till April and get them in the field and ready to rock. Like you can time it out a bit better when you know what you're kind of actually trying to achieve. And then from there, yeah, you might have, you know, customers on the other line trying to get you to show up to fix some stuff or a guy that needs something dropped off on site. But you've block scheduled some space now to do some of these other high importance things that aren't necessarily high urgency things.
Yeah, and it's just like sales. I mean, when we're starting at the end, just take something as simple as our revenue goals. You know, we know, okay, how many, look at our close rate, how many proposals we're going to need to put out, how many leads we're going to need to get to those proposals. And it's just, again, starting at the end and then working backwards. And the same thing goes for, you know, building that right team and your people. And that's the second goal, the second key that you have is talking about building this right team. As everybody says, there's just aren't any people out there and, you know, they're all no good and this and that. I mean, we all hear that. But how do we go about building that right team? Because if we can't build the right team as business owners, we're going to be stuck in that thing where all the decisions are going to have to come through us. We're going to have a rake structure in our business. And we're never going to get out of there. We're never going to be able to grow our business because we've got a lid on this thing and we can't go any bigger.
Yeah. So one of the best lessons I had to learn early on was essentially that, you know, a bad painter was actually much worse than no painter at all. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times there's a lot of pressure in business to go and hire somebody real quick based on the fact that maybe a lot of projects just came in. Maybe somebody quit unannounced. Or maybe just work piled up in a way that you didn't perceive, and all of a sudden now you've got to quickly make a hire because you're the one dealing with it all. Right. And owners very quickly have a very emotional reaction to that, and they tend to kind of think through, like, who can take on all this crap that I've got on my plate, or who can take on all these, you know, things so that I don't have customers, you know, wondering what the hell's going on. And they're more worried about, like, that activity happening than they are about the actual having the right person that can actually make those things work properly. And so it's a very backwards approach where it's like, this is what I need. Can you do what I need? Okay, you can. You're telling me you can. Okay, great. Get on board. Let's try you out. And it's a process of trial and error. And people say to me all the time, like, it's so hard to find a good person. I've got a guy who just told me he can do the work. He's available. Why would I say no to that? But if you look at that track history of those types of decisions, it's time and time again, those people don't work out. They cause more issues. They put you more further back on what you're trying to achieve. And it took me a couple of years to really get the discipline to do this, but like to slow down in my hiring process and actually to spend time doing it properly. You know, so there was a time in my career, well, the last 2 years at College Pro Painters, I got very good at this, and I got it to the point where I was the guy that would help basically hiring 150 franchise managers a year for that organization and help seed, not all 400, but I was involved in about 400, you know, people being hired as painters every single year and seed some of them to become managers for the next fiscal year. And there was quite a process that went into that. I mean, that was my full-time thing, but I walked away with some very good recruiting strategies, some very good perspective on what it actually takes to find good people. And I realized a few things. You know, the first thing I realized was that when I'm actually recruiting, I'm not just necessarily like putting my, you know, company on a pedestal saying you better, you know, be lucky to work for me. Mm-hmm. I was actually putting myself out there pretty vulnerably, actually being like, we need good people. And I'm willing to kind of like sell a little bit and market quite a bit to those types of people to find them. And you have to kind of switch your mentality from like, I'm recruiting to more like, no, wait a minute. We're doing sales and marketing.
Exactly.
And, you know, you look at the economy today. In 2008, the finite resource was people, or was jobs. Everyone was trying to get better at sales and marketing. That was the buzzword for everybody. And it's funny, I don't hear it changing as much until you actually ask people, okay, what specifically are your biggest challenges? And they're like, finding good people. Right. And I'm like, cool. How much are you spending on AdWords this year? $40,000. How much did you spend on recruiting ads this year? $2,000. Why? I don't know.
So true.
Right. So we've been hardwired to think like more sales equals more success equals more profit, yada, yada, yada. But right now the finite resource is people. Yeah. And we need to get better at putting time, money, and effort into finding and developing people. And it's not going to get easier. Right. You know, my generation, I'm 31. My generation doesn't want to work in the trades. They want to go be Mark Zuckerberg. Mm-hmm. They want to go invent, you know, new ideas and work online. And so it's going to be harder and harder to make the trades an appealing option for people. But yet at the same time, there is, especially in Canada anyways, renovations is one of the largest industries now in Canada. Mm-hmm. Bigger than forestry, bigger than some massive industries that we've had for years. It's renovations. There's a ton of money in it.
Yeah, there's so much opportunity in the trades and construction. And I like what you were talking about the program that they've got in Canada. Because in the States, there's just this huge push to get kids into four-year schools. They come out, they've got a ton of school debt. There aren't the jobs out there, so they end up working at Starbucks. In construction, we'll pay for your training, and you can come out of there making 60, 80 a grand right out the door. Don't get me going on that, but that's a different topic. But you're right. I mean, you've got such a limited supply that it's going to take a lot of work to get these people. I talk about the three-legged stool where you've got to sell work, you've got to do work, and you've got to keep score. Well, there's so much work out there now, and we can sell the work, but we can't do the work because we don't have the people. And this is what takes planning. One of these legs always tends to be weak, and all of a sudden we get all these jobs, and you're right. Oh, we got to go get some people, so we end up getting the crappy painter like you're talking about. So your recruiting's got to be planned out. And also the retaining, you've got to retain these guys. And that takes a special program. And the training, that's the big thing, is getting constantly recruiting, constantly retaining, and constantly training. And that's how you're going to keep the people, because it's only going to get worse. And if you don't, you're going to get your guys poached, they're going to go somewhere else, they're not going to be happy, and then you're really screwed. Your number one asset is your people, so take care of them.
Totally. Do you want to give you guys, like everyone, just some very specific things they can do to generate some decent apps, just so there's like some tangibility to this idea?
Sure, yeah, that'd be great.
So obvious ones that hopefully most of you guys are using, ZipRecruiter, if you're not already, checkers we work with, those are the two that I'm hearing a lot about that are actually getting people results. There's always the classic stuff that doesn't necessarily give you the best result or the best quality, but it can still work. So we use Craigslist. We post every day at 11 and 4. We do that four times, so two on one next day. And then we have a 48-hour period we have to wait, but our original post is now repostable. So now we can repost every single day, 11 and 4, and I just click on my phone, just click repost. And it helps us always stay at the top, basically. And then the most powerful ones that we've been using has actually been through Facebook and LinkedIn. So for Facebook, we're getting our staff together every time we have a new position to hire for. We're drawing up what we call an ideal candidate profile. So like what this person's like, their strengths, their wants, their needs, their fears. We think about who that person actually is that we're looking for and more about their needs and wants than anything. And then we show it to our team and we get them to basically send out a message on Facebook. And so they send off one-off messages on Facebook to their, you know, friends, people that they know extremely well, people that might be a good fit, people that are well connected in the industry. And they say, hey, so-and-so, our company XYZ is looking for a person in XYZ role. Curious, do you know anybody who would be a good fit for this? See link below. And then they link like one of the ads that they have online to that Facebook message. And then offer some money. P.S. We're offering a $500 hiring bonus if you know anybody. And so if you have 10 staff and you have each of them send out 100 individual messages on Facebook, that's 1,000 messages that can go out in an afternoon. And that's how we've been doing it, especially recently building Breakthrough Academy. That's how we've hired every single one of our team. We've got 20 people hired in the last 3 years, and they were very high-level people, and they were very hard to find. None of them were applying or looking online for jobs. They're all very successful in what they do, but they saw this opportunity through a friend in Facebook, and away we went.
I like that. Word of mouth and referrals is always the best way to get new business, and it's the best way to get new people. From the things that you're doing, you're just taking that up a notch with social media. So that sounds great. Now, what we used to do to get our roofers, we would offer the bonus also to the guys because they're the ones that know the other roofers, the guys in the industry. So whether it's hanging out at the bar or whatever, you know, they all know each other. And everybody's working. Anybody that's any good has already got a job. But they may not be happy with where they are. They may be quietly looking for other opportunities. And if you've got your guys out there, particularly talking about what a great company that you have, you know, and how much they like the job, and this is why it's so important to keep all your people happy.
Yeah. I'll give you one other really good one. It's the exact same as Facebook, but you use LinkedIn and you use advanced search functionality called Sales Navigator. And it allows you to search by geographic location. You can search by like certain job, like, you know, project manager of roofing company in the past. You can search certain jobs they've had. You can even search certain companies that they may have worked for. And you can get this list and you just click to connect with all of them. And usually about 30% accept your connection, and then you send them a very similar message, except you compliment them first. You say, hey, I noticed on your back history you did this. Pretty awesome. P.S. Our company XYZ is looking for a person in XYZ role. Curious, do you know anyone? See link below. We're also offering a hiring bonus if you do. The key into all of this is you're saying, do you know anybody who would be a good fit? So it's not so threatening to these people, right. But you're getting the word out through your staff's network, who often know good people. And then through LinkedIn, you're getting your message out through people that already are in that same professional position. The LinkedIn one works a lot better for like managers, office people, things that have more professional roles in your organization. But that's one we're using right now, actually, to find a marketing manager. And we get about 3 to 4 good applicants a week. Really? And now we're just screening through them like crazy to make sure we have the right fit. So,
well, it sounds like you're saying that we need to just be constantly recruiting, and it's not something that, as most contractors will do, as you say, it's, oh, I got to have somebody here next week, and you're going to try to jam someone in here, and it's not going to be the right fit.
Yeah. It's like always be closing, right? Yes. Always be recruiting.
I was just going to say that.
First prize, you get a Cadillac. Third prize, you're fired.
Yeah, that's right. I love that movie. Glengarry Glen Ross with Alec Baldwin. And it's a classic. Anybody that hasn't seen that movie that's in sales, you got to check it out. It's hilarious and has some great points about selling.
But that's the same intentionality and intensity that I used to have around recruiting. And actually our team has now. Like I've now got people in place where that's what they do.
Yeah, and that's got to be you got to get that through your entire company and always be recruiting. Well, the third key that you have is building the right systems. And we always hear so much about systems and this and that. Let's talk about that a bit.
Sure. Yeah, people love to say the word systems or working on the company and all this kind of stuff. But the truth is they don't actually know, a lot of them don't really know what that fully means. Mm-hmm. They'll sit down and they'll say, yeah, like working on the company, like, you know, getting job descriptions or, you know, like having a budget that we track or, yeah, like getting a CRM system or project management software in place. And all those things are true. Those are all things that you could do to work on the company and build a system for the company. But if all those things are just one-off ideas that kind of like, okay, we have a CRM system, great. Okay, we've got some job descriptions we downloaded off Google, awesome. Okay, we built a budget with our accountant, great. Those things all have to link and be one thing, one machine. And until they're properly linked, they're never going to be fully as effective as they could have been. And you will still be, as an owner, kind of in between all these little things that didn't work out, catching all the little missing pieces and still stuck in the day-to-day. So I'll walk you guys through what this looks like, but it's basically like a performance system that allows your staff to take ownership of their role, allows you to kind of see from a dashboard level what's actually going on and kind of gamify the company so you can actually become a little bit more of like the puppeteer of this entire organization instead of being kind of in the weeds with it.
Right.
So the first step to all of this is very simple, but it's having a budget for your year. How did you do last year? Look at how much revenue you did, how much you spent on your variable expenses, how much your gross profit margins were, how much you spent on overhead, so vehicles, overhead staff salary costs, marketing, things like that. And that's a pretty good indicator of at least the percentages anyways of what should be or could be for next year. So if you spent 35% on labor, you'll probably spend somewhere around that next year as well. Mm-hmm. Now you can look at that and say, you know what, our gross profit margins were you know, let's use round numbers, 40%. And I would really love them to get to 42% next year. Well, what do you do when you build your budget for next year? Do you increase charge rate by $1 or $2 an hour? Do you work on productivity in the field with your staff? Do you work on discounts with your suppliers? The money has to come from somewhere. But by looking at last year, you can make decisions now about your next fiscal year and make real kind of concrete changes to get those percentages to be where you want them to be. So it starts with a budget. The budget kind of tells you what you need to go do, and it also tells you kind of some benchmarks, some goals to go after and achieve.
And it's unfortunate, you know, there's so few contractors that really start with that even work with a budget because they don't like the numbers, you know. It's just like, I'd rather get out there and build, and I'd rather get out there and sell. But when it comes to numbers, they're just not very good at it, and they don't like it. Is that something that you see in your business?
Yeah, it's complicated, especially if you're not used to it, right? It's just like, I don't know. Did we make money or not? There's money in the bank account. Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It is. It can be quite complicated if you're not used to looking at these numbers and your accountant sits you down and talks in accountant speak. You're going to get lost. And so that's not all of our clients, but I'd say there's a decent percentage in there that just they hate it. Yeah. So we've created like a fairly simple template that people can use to really just pump in their last year's profit and loss statements or their taxes they got from their accountant and then use that to really see what next year should look like. And we have a coach that walks people through it and actually makes sure you have a real budget for next year that's usable. Mm-hmm. And then that makes other things usable. Like some people say, yeah, we do job cost cards. Like we track how much profit we make per job. And I'm like, cool. Do you have a target? Like, do you know why that target's so important? It's like, yeah, we need to make 40% margins. If we don't, well, I don't know, actually. So it's like, great. So if you make 35% margins, did you realize that half of your net is actually going to be gone? Like you'll make half as much money. No, I didn't realize that. It's like, okay. So let's get into why these numbers are important and job by job track how much profit's being made per job and see the ramifications of five jobs going wrong. Right. And how that needs to be made up for in the next five jobs and what that means for your ability to hire that sales guy that you want and why you can or cannot hire him based on your ability to make profit on the next five jobs.
Yeah, I'm just saying that you've got to start there because also you've got to do a post-mortem on the job because you've got to see, hey, what went right, what went wrong, yes. Here is our target, here is our budget, here's our actual, here's the difference. How are we going to improve that? But without having that budget and the place to start with, you don't know what's going to happen until it's too late.
Yeah. You can't change what you don't track or you don't measure. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just guesswork. And I'm a big believer of like I trust my gut. I use my gut a lot every day. But if I have data to go along with it, I'm twice as powerful. Mm-hmm. And it's the combination of those two that kind of guide my decision-making on a daily basis.
So what other systems do we have?
Okay, so I'll just quickly glance over a few few of these, but you need to build a sales plan and a production plan as well. So we help. We have a template we're actually going to put in the show notes with you guys where you can break down how many leads, estimates, jobs, and dollars booked you need to have by year end. And actually, it'll break it down for you automatically each week, how much needs to be done. And you can adjust for seasonality. So you can be like, we don't book much in January, but we'll book tons in June. It'll actually ramp up and ramp back down for you and show you what your weekly numbers need to be. And the same with production, how much produced revenue needs to be done, and how many, if you have staff versus subs, how many staff labor hours need to be produced in that week based on your average hourly charge rate. And again, it gives you and your team a week-by-week goal to go after to hit that year end. And it uses all the key metrics you need to do that.
So you make it easy for them.
We do. We try our best to, yeah. And then we use those metrics to get the staff involved. So we give everybody a dashboard. This gets a little bit more into our program, but we give all the owner and all the staff like a dashboard where every week they can all see how they're hitting and missing. And that gives us now the right to hold staff accountable to real numbers. So not just the sales team, but the production team, the administrative team, the support staff, like everybody has a number or what we call a deliverable that they need to deliver on to be worth an ROI on their salary. And then those job descriptions that you downloaded off Google, you can alter them. And what you put in there is a section called deliverables. And the deliverables are the numbers that these people are in charge of hitting. And then what you put in their tasks of all the things they need to achieve are all the things that relate to them hitting those numbers. And their bonuses can be relating to those numbers. And everything now can be tied in so the staff care about what you care about, mm-hmm. but just in light of things that are directly in charge of. You know, you might have you as a company trying to hit, you know, 1.2 million in produced revenue, 40% gross profit margins, and that'll help you make 180K corporate net income. Well, what does that mean for your operations manager? Well, he might need to produce that 1.25, but maybe at a 43% margin, so slightly higher margin in case he screws up. And what does that mean for the guys working below him? Well, maybe they don't know anything about dollars, but they know how many hours they need to produce. And we can work out ahead of time, hey, 30,000 hours will equal that 1.4 million. So why don't you give 15,000 hours to one crew, 15,000 hours to the other crew, and their job is to produce that 15,000 hours by year end. And everybody now has a number that they can go weekly after and know that if they hit their year end, that they've helped contribute to everybody above them.
Wow, you mean everybody getting on the same page and going in the same direction? What a novel idea.
What do you know? And it takes thinking, right? Like that doesn't happen because you suddenly on a Tuesday have everything prepared and you can just give it to your staff. Like this takes time. And this is a large part of what we spend our time on as an organization, getting all of our trades contractors doing. Let's spend a couple hours each week figuring out the numbers. Okay, now let's spend a couple hours figuring out how to break these numbers down to weekly goals. Now let's spend a couple more hours figuring out the recruiting plan to find good people. Now let's spend some hours building their job descriptions based on these goals. And piece by piece, we slowly put in all these little ideas until it becomes one management system that works for the entire organization.
So this almost sounds like kind of a franchise system where you've got the templates, here's the book, this is the way you follow it, and it's a step-by-step process to build a successful business.
You got it, man. That's what I grew up in. Since I was 18, I ran a franchise. And I ran franchisees and I worked for the franchisor. And I saw what worked extremely well in franchising, which was systemization, replication, predictability based on past numbers. Like we were trained how to execute extremely well very quickly as young people. But the thing is, too, I saw a lot of things that sucked about franchising, like royalties and using those royalties for the franchisor, which means the franchisee can't afford to hire that middle management team, like TERFs. You might have a certain postal code that you're in charge of, which is great for your first 3 years of operations, but now you want to expand and you've got to pay more to the franchisor to expand. Brand. You might have a certain way of doing things that your brand is now locked up into this big, massive corporate brand that you don't have as much control over. There's all these things that really I found franchising was a great idea years ago, and now it's becoming like kind of tired and overused. And the word even franchise is overused. And the wrong people, I think, are stepping into the franchising game and calling a business that's half built a franchise.
Right.
So what I kind of set off to do was this idea of how do we give all the systems, the support, the procedures, even the community and culture that you get with like-minded entrepreneurs, how do you get that, not just in a franchise anymore, but get that into the public's world? And that's what Breakthrough Academy, that's what our organization essentially is. It's all the ideas and development tools that franchises use, but given to the public. And it's working. It's been really cool.
Well, it's the idea of repeatable systems and so forth. You know, we're whether it's McDonald's or whatever, hey, this is how we do it. Here's the process It's written, it's clear. Everybody knows what their job is and what their responsibilities are, so they're clear on the expectations and the results that they're going to have to produce in all going in that same direction to the same common goal that you're talking about.
Totally. And it, and everyone can share in the success now. I mean, you know, in the past, things like what we do would be locked up in a franchise that somebody pays $50,000 to maybe $100,000 just to get started with, let alone all the training and royalties they pay. We charge barely anything in comparison now, which has allowed us to bring on a lot of members fairly quickly. Like, we're just about to hit our fourth year. We're 220 live members right now with actively working with us. So on a week-to-week basis, setting goals and getting all the structure put in place. I'll give you some interesting stats, because we actually measure this almost like a franchisor was. So we have live access to everyone's numbers. Right now, we manage just under $450 million worth of revenue, and we had 126% net profit increase per member on average last year.
That's awesome. Well, in wrapping up, tell me a little more about this academy of yours, because it does really simplify a lot of the problems that we have as contractors trying to build a business. But we never had training or education on how to build that business. And it sounds like this is really what you're providing in a box. Is that right?
Yeah, as best we can. So, yeah, I mean, essentially, we've got all your templates, all your procedures. We spent about $750,000 on the write-ups of everything. So it's done now. You can just take it and run and use it. We've got about seven coaches that are each established with a member, and they're working with, you know, basically a group of members at a time to help walk them through all this content to use it properly. And we've got some pretty cool events. We meet every 2 weeks online. We meet every quarter live, and we do kind of crazy adventure travel trips together. And we've created this community now where people don't have to be alone trying to figure this out, Googling it, talking to their accountant and their lawyer, and slowly putting the pieces together themselves. Like, we could just give it to you. So our ideal client in all of this is usually a trades or home service person. So painting, landscaping, roofing, renovations, they're usually somewhere between 1 and 10 million in revenue. Most of them are growing out of control. So they have more growth coming at them than they can properly handle. And they need support and help in this. They're not the kind of person that's going to build all this themselves. And they have the, you know, they have all the wherewithal to do it themselves. They need someone to help guide them in these questions they have. So that's what we look for.
Well, I love that idea of community, because that's something that's so important. You hit the nail on the head where you're talking about that it's, as a contractor that I was for 30 years, it's freaking lonely out there. And you're you're constantly questioning yourself. You don't have the support. By having that community, I was always involved with peer groups, for instance, where you've got non-competing contractors, which is, sounds like what you've got in this group, and you can all share information, share the best practices, and everybody benefits. And it's just, yep, you can move forward with so much more confidence, less chaos, and really have control, which is where we started with this conversation. You know, not working those 80 hours a week, putting out fires all the time.
Yeah, that's exactly. I find we're a combination of like really good content, phenomenal coaching. Our coaches are incredible, actually. And then this community, which has been closely guarded. So nobody just comes into Breakthrough Academy. They have to go through a vetting process first. And it's allowed our contractors who are here to have a ton in common, to really share liberally and openly, like their numbers and everything, with each other, and have no fear of that. And you're right. It's super powerful. Like, it's what's keeping our people around long-term is that community. So
that's awesome. Well, how can our listeners get more information? And I know that you'd mentioned you've got some templates that they can download also. How do we get in touch with you?
Cool. So our website, you can check it out. It's actually just being rebuilt right now, but check it out. It's btacademy.com. So B as in Bravo, T as in Tango, and then Academy, ACADEMY.com. So check us out there. We're going to give you guys some pretty cool tools. So I'm going to give you a business planning tool. So a one-page strategic plan that you can use to build your goals out for the next fiscal year. So grab that, because that'll help you guys in December for building out your year plan. An MBP file, it's called. It stands for Master Business Planning File. It's basically a glorified Excel file. It took about 1,000 hours to build it. Now that it's done, we usually give it out a lot. So it's going to track your profit, your financials, your production, and your sales all in one place, and then give you a dashboard to tell you how you're actually doing in the company. And then we'll give you some other cool little goodies around recruiting. So some stuff on job descriptions, how to build job ads, and a few things just to help you with finding good people. So we'll give you a nice little goodie package. That'll be in the show notes. Dave will give you that to get out to your group. And check us out, see what we're up to. If we can help you, let's chat. And if maybe now is not the right time, just check out some of the stuff we'll give you for downloads and start to use them for 2019. So,
Danny, that's great. Sounds like an awesome program. You gave us some great takeaways for our listeners and love those templates. We'll be sure to get those out in the show notes. Great conversation and appreciate you coming on the show today.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave.
Well, that's it for the show today. I really appreciate everybody listening. Be sure to subscribe and go to iTunes and rate and review the show. Really helps me. I would really appreciate it. And be sure to check out my Monday show, which is the Monday Quick Tips. I just talk about one thing. It's about 5-10 minutes long, but it gives you an action plan, just action steps that you can take back and put into place at your business. And it's something that can really help you. So be sure to check that out. So until next week, we'll catch you on the Roofer Show.